and away we go. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program, The Buckmaster Show, off and running on Monday, January 21st, 2024. I think I got the day wrong. Yeah, it's the 22nd. Thank you, John. We're in our 14th year with our radio show. We started that January 2nd, the 14th year, 13 full years so far, and all archived at buckmastershow.com. 98% of every show we have done is there and archived, and of course you can listen to the program live anywhere in the world. We have the live stream at buckmastershow.com. We're coming to you from 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for local news and talk on the radio. We have worldwide live listening, as I say, at buckmastershow.com. For our telephone interviews, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Monday, we do our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe and his family specialize in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls. Moe is a fantastic photographer. Picture framing and hanging services and hanging systems, that means Moe comes out to your home if you choose, and he'll put it up on the wall the way you want it. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and their website, doing e-commerce now at moesgallery.com. This week's one-on-one interview featuring Pat Willerton, a professor of political science in the School of Government and Public Policy at the University of Arizona. Dr. Willerton is the author of a book and roughly 80 articles and chapters. His professional experience is primarily focused on Russia and other former Soviet Union countries. Dr. Willerton has regularly traveled to Russia since his first visit in 1982. He has been keeping an eye on Russia for over 50 years. He's currently working on a research project with a Polish colleague on the contrasting Russian and Polish perspectives on the war in Ukraine. Professor Willerton, great to see you again.
Good to see you again, Bill. You and I go back a long time.
We do. Decades. Fall of the Berlin War, I brought a TV crew out to your home within hours when that was happening for my TV show. So we go back a long time. And as I say, you've been looking at Russia and covering Russia. You're teaching a couple of courses at the University of Arizona on one of them, Russian foreign policy. So here we have the two-year anniversary coming up, almost a month to the day. It'll be February 22nd.
That's right.
Since Russia launched this action. Give me the overall view of why this happened and kind of where we are right now.
Well, of course, there are contrasting views.
Just like you with your Polish friend, disagreeing on the war.
Very, very intensely on many things.
Well, let's listen to both sides. What's the Russian side and say the Polish perspective, which might mirror, perhaps, may I say, the American perspective?
You know, I like that you want to bring in the Polish perspective, not just the American. I'll start with the Russian side.
Okay.
The Russians have been clear since Mikhail Gorbachev was the leader of the Soviet Union, when the Warsaw Pact organization that bound the Soviet Union with various allies was disbanded, when the Soviet Union moved out of Eastern Europe, allowed Germany to reunify and go into NATO. They had an understanding, no NATO expansion eastward. And our then Secretary of State, James Baker, agreed to this. There's no treaty. There's no document. This was a verbal understanding. And I think we can be pretty certain that no Soviet leader would have agreed to these things if you were going to have NATO, the American-led alliance system that had been in struggle with the Soviet Union since 1949, allow them to expand right up to the border. But that's essentially what's happened. About 2006, this is during the George W. Mm-hmm. Bush period, NATO determined that they were going to bring Georgia and Ukraine into NATO. There was that move in 2008 under a different president, Saakashvili. The end result was, of course, there was a war between Russia and Georgia. Russia won, and Georgia is not in NATO, and they have a quiescent relationship with Russia, tortured. Ukraine, though, was the big one, the kahuna. You know, Zbigniew Brzezinski, President Carter's national security advisor, one of the most influential academics in the forging of American foreign policy the last 40 years, said that Russia with Ukraine is a great power. Russia without Ukraine is a regional power. So I think the Russians see it. This is a major effort by the United States to weaken Russia, take the country most important to Russia, the country that Russians see as the font of their civilization, and pull it away, bring it into NATO, put American nuclear weapons on the territory. Mm-hmm. That's the Russian view. Every Russian leader from Gorbachev through Yeltsin, Putin, Medvedev, Putin has said, we will not tolerate this. Mm-hmm. What would be, say, a Polish or more Western view? Russia has been a domineering bully in Eastern Europe for centuries, so to speak. An opportunity arose with the collapse of the Soviet Union to not only see the liberation of these countries, but to ensure that in the future Russia would not re-encroach on these countries. We need this alliance arrangement. We need formal commitment so a country like Poland knows that if Russia mucks around, whatever, that the United States is militarily committed to its security. Now, we do not have that arrangement with Ukraine, and we would not have it until they joined NATO. But under NATO arrangements, this is a collective security organization, we would be committed to the defense of Ukraine against anyone, in this case, Russia. So these are very different perspectives. So what happened? Is it Russian aggression, or is it Russia defending itself because 8 years earlier there was a coup in Kiev in which the democratically elected but pro-Russian president was overthrown? There was a lot of Western involvement in that, and he was replaced with a pro-Western group, which mostly dominated by Western Ukrainians who were very anti-Russian, which moved Ukraine in a different direction. Much of Ukraine objected to this, and some of it broke away, including Eastern Ukraine. The Russians went into Crimea. That's a whole complicated issue I won't get into, but let's just say from their standpoint, Crimea wanted the Russians in. It's Russian.
Yeah.
So they don't, for them, this is, there's nothing to talk about. They were not going to allow Crimea with its very important naval bases to become a part of NATO. So that's where we are now.
So you gave us the Russian perspective, the Polish, European perspective, now the American perspective.
Well,
which I assume is in line pretty much with the Polish European perspective.
Well, certainly.
But are there differences?
Well, there. Okay. Look, we have various elements, but I think the United States, both elite opinion and public opinion, is we're very hostile to Vladimir Putin. We see Russia as a menacing actor under Putin. We think that he has designs to recreate the old Soviet Union, and this is where it may start with these former Soviet, republics, bringing them back in. So I think this is probably a mainstream view. I rarely meet anyone here that is, shall we say, not quite negative towards either Putin or Russia in the current era.
Mm-hmm. However, the sentiment in this country, it seems like there's been so much focus, of course, on Israel and Gaza right now.
Right.
You don't hear folks talking much about the war in Ukraine. It's almost going off the radar.
It's dragging out.
I mean, we hear about it because of the arguments going on in Washington about the aid to Ukraine and being tied to border policies. But you don't hear about it as kind of the front burner issue in this
country. Because it's not when you're dealing with Israel. Israel, there's no country in the world that is a higher priority for American foreign policy than Israel.
Yeah, and so Russia is a back burner?
Well, issue. I mean, Ukraine. We're talking about where we have commitments.
Yeah.
In other words, obviously Russia is a major threat like China. I'm talking about our commitments.
Okay.
You have to put Israel in the league with Britain, I suppose, with Canada.
Sure.
Ukraine is not there. Remember, Ukraine was a part of the Russian sphere of influence.
Yes.
The Russians look at Ukraine in a way, the way we look at Canada and Mexico. Hmm. We will not brook foreign powers moving into Mexico or Canada. It's unimaginable that those two countries would join blocs. Now, you know, the Mexican president is very critical of Western and American policy in Ukraine.
He says we called it. We caused it. Yeah.
So, but we would never tolerate, let's say, an Obrador regime to cut some deal with a foreign power.
After we take the break, I want to talk with you, Professor Willerton, about how you think this whole thing's going to end. I mean, is it a stalemate? What about attrition? Yeah. Let's get into all of that. But right now, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town. We could all use some comfort food, couldn't we, Professor Willerton?
Yes, we could.
Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Check out the website. Before you stop in, you'll see the full menu, and you'll be very tempted by the many opportunities you have there to buy some wonderful European-style breads and pastries. They are open. They take Monday off. They'll be open tomorrow at 6:30, and they do a great breakfast and lunch. Mona's Danish Bakery. It is our Monday one-on-one with Professor Pat Willerton, expert in Russian foreign affairs, and we always enjoy talking with Professor Willerton. It is the one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the 22nd of January. Pat Willerton is with us, Professor Willerton from the University of Arizona. I've known the professor for many, many years, and this guy knows Russia. I mean, he's been looking at Russian politics, studying it for 50 years. He first got interested in Russia, I think you told me once, when you were 10 years old.
Yeah, I do remember the Cuban Missile Crisis and climbing under the desk. And for some reason...
Is that kind of got you interested?
No, it was culture. It was culture, music, the arts.
The ballet.
Uh-huh. And also for me, because I study politics, I think the quality, it's an enigma. Uh-huh. It's a mystery. It's always been a mystery. It's been a hard country to understand. It still is.
Yeah. Okay. So... a month from today, the 22nd of February, will mark the two-year anniversary of this really brutal war that's just cost on both sides tens of thousands of lives. How do you envision this thing ending?
Well, there are a couple of different scenarios.
I mean, is this going to be this? We hear stalemate, attrition. Okay, what are the scenarios that you see?
Well, it's not a stalemate. It's never been a stalemate. The Russians have been almost, from the beginning, firmly in charge. They've had one arm tied behind the back and had a glove on the other hand. They introduced 200,000 troops, confronting over 700,000. It was the second strongest NATO army behind Turkey.
Okay. I mean, they could have gone in and just leveled Ukraine.
Exactly. They went in initially to get a political outcome, and they almost got it. They had troops outside of Kiev and Kharkov, and they almost had an agreement with the Zelensky government in Istanbul, you know, where the Kiev regime would accept Crimea as a part of Russia, blah, blah, blah. And Boris Johnson rushed in and said, no, you're not going to do that. We will support you to the end. And so the deal fell through. The Russians had nowhere near the forces that they needed, 200,000. That's a country of over 40 million at the time. Mm-hmm. They've lost a lot of people. I mean, left the country. Yeah.
So they had to decide how they wanted
They've been building up. So they weren't chased out of Kiev and Kharkov. They pulled their forces back. They pulled back. And so they've basically been in a kind of holding pattern, controlling about 22% of the country. They added four regions to Russia. Those regions are never going to leave Russia now. So
Crimean area?
Crimea was already in. In 2014, they've added four others, the Donbass, etc. Okay. That all happened. And when I say it's not a stalemate, what I mean is that what you said, they could have just leveled cities. They could have done this. They've chosen not to. When you think about the fact that in nearly 2 years, fewer civilians have died than in Gaza over the last 4 months, that says a lot. That's both countries. I'm talking about also Ukraine, both countries. They've been very careful not to unduly kill civilians. Civilians have died. Of course they do. But oftentimes, your expectations would be many.
Sure.
The many that you talk about, the tens and hundreds of thousands have died, these are troops. These are soldiers on both sides. Mm-hmm. So the truth is, look, these are Slavic people. Every Russian I know has a connection to Ukraine, okay? Mm-hmm. So this is painful. This is a painful war for the Russians. And, of course, it is for Ukrainians. So when you talk about where do I see
how does
this,
it end?
Look, the Russians are firmly in command now. What they're doing, there's no what we'll call large arrow move where all of a sudden 200,000 troops move somewhere. They got over a million troops there. The Ukrainian forces have been dwindled down and basically killed. They have a small force.
The supply line is really, really tenuous right now for Ukraine.
Well, they're running out of people. They run out of ammunition. They're running out of missiles. They're running out of everything. And the Russians have basically built up the infrastructure. They have everything. So the bottom line is there's now about a 700 or 800 mile front where this war is being fought. That's a long front.
Yeah.
And the Russians are slowly advancing almost everywhere. Slowly. It's unimpressive. Yeah. It's a kilometer here. It's five there. But they're moving slowly forward. So I don't anticipate a big arrow move, but it could come. And if it comes, it'll be in the north. They will go after Kharkov or Kharkiv, depending upon what language you want to pronounce it, which was the unofficial capital and a pro-Russian city in eastern Ukraine. They could come down and do that. They have a lot of options now. But what I foresee is you have Crimea and now four more regions have been added to Russia. That's five out of 25 provinces of old Ukraine. Okay. Four more are going to be included, I predict, which will include Kharkov and Odessa and a couple of others. The Russian leaders have all said publicly, Kharkov is a Russian city. Odessa is a Russian city. I say to my students, what does that mean? It means they're going to bring it into Russia, okay? Mm. They have not said that yet about Kyiv or Kiev, okay? They have not said that. So I foresee at least the eastern part and southern part of the country is going to be absorbed into Russia. Mm-hmm. That then raises and this may take 6 months, a year, I really don't know. I've mm-hmm. given up predicting, but they're mm-hmm. moving. Mm-hmm. This is a steamroller, mm-hmm. sending in F-16s, sending in distance missiles that'll hit some Russian cities. None of this is going to change this. What this does is just kills some Russians. It's going to prolong the war, and a lot more Ukrainians are going to die. So the Russians are slowly moving. So then the issue is how much further do they go? Putin himself has said that a big mistake was made after World War II, that the Soviet Union absorbed Western Ukraine into the country. This is the part where Lviv, Lvov is located. They're virulently anti-Russian.
Uh-huh.
When you look at the last elections before, 98% voted for the mm-hmm. anti-Russian candidate. Mm-hmm. They've said, we're not going in there. So they're going to leave that. Now, would that be absorbed into Poland? Because a lot of it used to be a part of Poland. Mm-hmm. Some of it used to be a part of Hungary. Mm-hmm. So who knows? We don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Russians will go there. Will they go the rest of the way? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think this is open. I don't think the plan was to take all of this country, but they're achieving their goals. They had three.
Mm-hmm.
Ukraine will not be in NATO. It's not. We're going to demilitarize Ukraine. It's being demilitarized, and we're going to remove these fascists, what the Russians call Nazis, these people that supported the heroic to the fascists in Ukraine World War II, the Stepan Bandera supporters. We're going to remove them. So those goals, they're moving on all of them. But whether or not there is a remaining rump Ukraine state, that it will be neutral. It will be neutral like it was before.
Uh-huh.
Or not, I don't know. I think that to be determined.
All right, there's an important piece of this, Professor Pat Willerton. That is the economic piece. And we've been told that the 2 years that the sanctions have been in effect, some of the narrative has been it's harmed Russia, but you're going to tell me, I'm sure, it's had almost the opposite effect.
It harmed the Russian economy about the first, maybe the second quarter of 2022 when we applied them.
Yes.
Since then, it's had almost no effect.
I mean, the oil market, they're still selling a ton of oil
well,
to places like India.
Well, and the Europeans are just killed because what's happened is we've set these prices, but what happens is a country like India buys
yes.
oil from Russia. Then they sell it to the Europeans at much higher levels. So you have a whole range of countries that are economically helping Russia, from Brazil to India to China. People don't understand that. The sanctions have been applied by Western European countries, Canada, and the United States. I can't say North America because not Mexico. No Latin American country other than, I think, Guyana. Almost no Southern Hemisphere countries. So about 85% of the world is not sanctioning Russia. This is not the world against Russia. This is the West against Russia. And there's a lot of countries, and we don't like talking about it, like India,
yeah.
like Saudi Arabia, like Turkey, like Brazil, they're working with the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is very complicated. It's very costly. The Russian economy this past year grew at about a 3.1% rate. We grow at a 2.1%. The rest of Europe is in a recession. Germany is careening toward a depression. They're deindustrializing.
But you're saying the Russian economy is very strong
it's
right now?
Strong or and
getting
stronger.
Stronger.
They have the lowest unemployment rate they've had since the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Wow.
They have some problems with inflation right now. Their economy is growing very fast.
Mm-hmm. But that's not what we hear, the traditional
narrative. You know, when I share these views, somebody
yes.
can say to me, why, you're just promoting Russia, like as if I were promoting
Russia.
Or
you're a Putin
apologist. Right.
Yeah.
You know, the truth of the matter is I want realism. How do we engage a country effectively? I want my country, the United States, to succeed. The sanctions failed. Let's admit it. Why did we really think that would work? Did we think that Russians would overthrow Putin when this is the most economically resource-wise self-sufficient country in the world? It was boneheaded. I'm looking at boneheaded policies. This isn't about championing Russia. It's about championing my country, Canada, the West, mm-hmm. to get realistic about this. And incidentally, looking ahead, I'm worried about problems with China. I mean, mm-hmm. What is the limit limit of this is this: the dilemmas in the Middle East are very costly to us right now, and they may get more costly. We've got big problems around Taiwan, as you know. That's a whole other matter. And now the Russia situation. So for me, what I want is realism, and that means we have to be realistic about Russia. You don't have to like Russia, okay? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You don't have to like them, but let's be realistic. The sanctions failed. The counteroffensive of Ukraine failed.
And look what we're talking about in Washington with the billions of dollars.
Well, they would like to get $68 billion, and there's talk about seizing the $300 billion that are frozen in the West from the Russian Central Bank. This is a lot of money, and it may feel good to grab it from the Russians and then give it to Ukraine, but we better think about the consequences, what that does to the dollar. How do the Saudis, the Indians, the Chinese, the South Africans, how do they look at that? They invest in the dollar, and they have annoyed us. We're not happy with South Africa doing what it is with Israel, and Indonesia just sponsored a case, and we're not happy with what India is doing to help Russia and Brazil, let alone China. These countries, what if they start to pull dollars?
Oh, boy. That would be a big problem.
I worry about that.
All right, Professor Willerton, always a pleasure. The time always goes very quickly, but it's great to hear you and a viewpoint that a lot of people, you know, may not share, but it's good to hear. Good to hear both sides.
Well, thank you. I think it's important to get a variety of views.
It is.
This is complicated.
It's a very complicated situation. All right. Our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Also, I want to talk about Green Things over at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. Stop by Green Things. Looks like I hope some of the hard freezes are over for the year and we can be doing some of our springtime gardening, but who knows? Green Things AZ and their sister business on site is ZocaloVillage.com. They're in their 53rd year of business and they're open daily. We'll take a break right here. More on the Buckmaster Show.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Time for our quarterly edition of the Consumer Scam Alert from the Better Business Bureau. With me in studio, Irene Coppola, the president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Tucson and Southern Arizona, and Denise Alvarez is with us, director of operations. How are you, ladies?
We're fabulous. Enjoying the weather.
Yes, I know. We need the rain, and yes, everything's looking so refreshed out there. I'm very concerned with AI, and I'm hearing so many people talk about these fake voicemails. Irene, it's pretty serious, isn't it?
It is very serious. It's quite scary. It's interesting how the scammers have evolved, right?
Yeah.
So now more than ever, it's so important to stay ahead of the game.
Well, this whole rapid achievement, Denise, in the manipulation of audio and artificial intelligence, individuals that have the malicious intent, have scammers see a really good opportunity here, and they, I hate to say it, but this technology could get to the point where it's going to fool a lot of people, Denise.
Yes, absolutely. When we were looking into it, AI models can generate speech that closely resembles any specific person's voice with not a lot of, you know, recordings. So they can just take it from your Facebook page, from any audio that they have, and they can just clone that voice.
Unfortunately, my voice is off there.
Yes.
Oh boy. No. But so how does that work? Do you have any idea, Irene, how they do it?
Absolutely. So like Denise indicated, our voice is everywhere, right? We're a social media society. All they need is just a little bit of our voice, and then they just connect it together. It's a cloning process to create the message to make it sound like us. So, let's talk in the work atmosphere. Mm-hmm. You get a voicemail from your boss saying, you know, please transfer immediately to this vendor. They need the money ASAP. I need you to do it. Please drop everything, get this done, blah, 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 right? And so you do it. You feel the sense of urgency of that voicemail. You get it done. So then you send an email to your boss and you say, hey, FYI, task taken care of. And your boss is like, what are you talking about? Well, you left me a voicemail and all that good stuff, right? So how can you keep that from happening? So we kind of have to get back to basics. Maybe what we do is you create a code between you and your boss and say, hey, even though to help us protect from this type of scam, when I get any requests, I'm going to double check with you, mm-hmm, or I'm going to ask for the code just so that we can help protect ourselves.
Boy, that is really good advice. If it gets to the point where it sounds so much like your boss, like your boss is calling you, you want to keep your job, and so people are going to go along with what the boss says. Denise, so how do we avoid this? That's one good strategy that Irene has come up with.
As far as consumers, you know, we've received some reports about people receiving voicemails from their family saying that they're in an emergency.
I've heard of this, yeah.
Yes, and so, you know, one of the things that we always say is stay calm, and I know that, you know, it's very difficult when somebody's screaming or crying, but really staying calm, asking questions, asking them, you know, where are you? Why haven't you called me from your cell phone? Or just simply hanging up and saying, you know, I'll call you right back. And if they say, no, it's an emergency, I need to talk to you now, just still do it. Call that number that you have for your relative instead of calling the number that they called you from, right? And staying calm, asking questions is really, really important.
Yeah, I've heard that. Actually, I do know of one person who got one of these calls, and it was purportedly from his grandson, mm-hmm, saying he had been arrested and needed to send money immediately.
Yes. And sometimes what they do is you say, hey, is this John?
Yeah.
And they say, yes, this is John. And so don't give them the answer to the question, right?
Uh-huh.
Ask them, which grandson is this? So that they tell you who it is instead of you telling them, you know, who your grandson is.
Getting back to what businesses can do, Irene Coppola, how do you secure the account? Maybe a multi-factor authentic verification?
Absolutely, definitely. Set up that multi-factor authorization with your email logins and other email settings. Verify the changes with the information with customers, your employees, and your vendors before doing it. That is so, so important. You know, it's almost like, again, getting back to basics, right? Really having that communication versus doing things just off the bat.
So staff training, this needs to be a priority, ladies, right?
Correct.
I mean, you need to get the staff together and say, this is out there and here's what we're going to do.
Correct, yes. You know, create a policy to confirm anytime that you're making any payment requests or changes. Like Irene said, you know, establish that code or word in order for you to be able to check before you make that transfer.
Let's go back now again and talk about strategies consumers can use, Irene.
Absolutely. So as we mentioned, there are many ways to help consumers avoid the situation. Going back to the code word, giving a digital code, if you will. I mean, quite frankly, I think about it with my kids. Mm-hmm. You know, my kids, you know, they're, you know, low 30s, late 20s. But they're in that demographic where they're going to hear their mom and their mom's asking for help or something.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, hey, let's set up this. And it's important to let them know this is what we need to do. This is our strategy because the odds of you getting contacted are high. Mm-hmm. So let's have our tools in place so that you know what? Our method is we're going to go with the code word. Mm-hmm. What's the code word? And that's what we're going to do. Yeah.
Yeah, and these scammers are getting so sophisticated, the technology, and like you said, don't talk back, Denise, to the voicemail.
Correct. Yeah. Don't call that number back. You know, don't try not to answer a lot of questions. Like I said, stay calm. You can always hang up and call, you know, if it's a consumer, your grandson, or if you're an employee, you know, just double check with your boss before making any of those changes, especially if they just seem odd.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about any other scams that are going around in the scam tracker hotline. Irene, or Denise, you want to take that one?
Yes, of course. So the IRS, obviously, you know, that's coming up. We've also been getting a lot of reports from robocalls that are supposedly from, you know, political, and they call back that number and it turns out that they want their personal information or they want to just, they want to verify that they're registered to vote. So be very careful with any phone calls that are unsolicited that you don't know. You know, we tend to send a lot of them to voicemail and we always say, hey, if they leave a voicemail, then we call them back. And if they don't, they probably, it wasn't that important, I guess. So just be sure not to pick up the phone or hang up if you don't feel comfortable before you make any changes or give them any information.
You know, I was just getting back to the AI and you mentioned the election. You could get a call conceivably from a candidate, the voice of a candidate, and saying, could you give me some money? I mean, this could be on a local, it could be a national level. Could you send me a donation? That
Correct.
Could be very scary.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is. It's a very difficult time right now just because AI plays such an important role. And, you know, the capabilities that, you know, scammers have now with AI, you know, just changes the whole game. So we just have to be, you know, very vigilant and cautious with any information that we provide or anything that we do.
Any mixers coming up that you guys want to talk about?
Absolutely. So this coming Thursday, January 25th, we have our mixer, our first one for 2024. We're back, everyone. We're back. Catalina Brewery from 5 to 7. We'd love to see you out there.
And there's no charge to cut in, right?
That is correct. So. And a little bird told me that we may even have the Girl Scouts there selling their cookies.
There you go. Getting ready for your big event in May, correct?
In April. April 19th at the Casino.
For years it was May, but
yes.
Now you've moved it to April.
Correct.
The date for that?
April 19th, our 2024 Torch Awards.
All right. And the nominations still available or no?
Nominations just ended.
Just ended.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We're excited.
All right, Denise, about the scam tracker, what information should folks know about that?
Yes. Please visit the BBB Scam Tracker at bbb.org/ Scam Tracker, and you can report any scams that you've heard. It's interactive, so you can put in your zip code and you can see anybody else that has reported any information around your area.
All right, Denise and Irene, always a pleasure from the Better Business Bureau, and it's bbb.org is your starting place. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, take a break right here. Buckmaster Show on a Monday. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the 22nd of January. This portion of our program, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, makes a great getaway. Only about a three-hour drive. So many outdoor activities over there. SouthwestNewMexico.org, the starting place to find out about the many things to do, great places to stay, and great places to eat as well. New Mexican cuisine, where the big question is it red or green chili for your enchilada? I'll go with the green today. Dr. Mark Sykes is the CEO and director of the Planetary Science Institute. For more than 50 years, a Tucson-based nonprofit engaged in the exploration of the solar system. Mark has been heading up the CEO for about 20 years, and it's always great to see you. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Great to be here, Bill.
And you had kind of a big announcement personally that you, in the past few days, you've decided that you will step aside at some point, I guess, during the calendar, maybe the end of the calendar year as the CEO, but it there's no mention there. This is not a retirement note.
No. I'm just going to allow my contract to expire,
yeah,
which would be December 31st, 2025. So a little less than 2 years from now, at which time I like to say I'll become a gentleman senior scientist.
Mm-hmm. And you can devote a lot of your time now after that to mm-hmm. research, mm-hmm. which you really haven't had all that much time to get into.
Well, it does put kind of a squeeze yeah. on things. And
running an organization like Planetary Science Institute.
Well, when I first started out, it was about 30 people and yep. 13 scientists, and today we're 200 people and 130 scientists in 33 states and number of countries and just kind of compress one's time and there's a mission coming up in a few years that is a thermal infrared survey of the sky and I really want to be involved with analyzing the data coming back from it, because in that data are going to be phenomena that I discovered 40 years ago, almost 40 years ago, with the IRAS infrared astronomical satellite data that was the first thermal infrared survey of the sky. These were long extended structures that move, you know, comet dust trails, and as well as asteroid dust bands from recent asteroid collisions. And there's a phenomenon I've seen then that... There's questions. There's a lot of open questions about these phenomena that I'm kind of looking forward to getting back to addressing.
How do you do a survey of the sky
with a satellite? It orbits the Earth and it maps out the sky as it you know longitudinally spreads around its orbit.
Wow.
So no, that'll be a lot of fun. There's just so much to do. I really can't see. Well, and that's just on the science side. Then there's things I'd love to do, more things I'd like to do in law, more things I want to get back to music, though I don't think I'll be on stage, but I want to be doing, get back to singing opera. So there's
yeah, that's something we haven't talked about with you in a long time, that you really had quite a career singing opera.
Well, over 30 years.
30 years.
Yeah, with the Arizona Opera Company.
Yeah.
And now it was chorus work.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, very few times I'd be doing a little bit of solo bits.
Mm-hmm.
But an awful lot of fun, you know. And it's a...
But it was very time-consuming, and of course you didn't really have time to do that and kind of run the organization.
Oh, I did. You know, sometimes you just work 80-hour weeks, you know. that's not a big deal.
Yeah. Whoa. All right, what's been going on? Well, a lot of kind of moon news, mm-hmm. if you will. Japan has become the fifth country to land on the moon. They have had a little bit of problems with their solar panels, but they can now say that the rising sun flag on the moon.
Yeah, and it's a big thing to actually land there. That's mm-hmm. that's the tough things. Too bad about the solar panels.
Yeah,
but no, it's a great achievement for Japan, and I expect more from them.
I'm not going to ask you what the other four. I know the other couple of the other four.
Well, U.S., Russia, China,
India,
and India orbited. I don't think it landed.
Oh, it didn't land.
Oh boy.
Yeah,
no,
U.S., Russia, Soviet Union, now Japan, and maybe it will come to us before
yeah, it'll
the
come
end
to us, yeah.
for
yeah,
the
or
end
or
of the,
tonight. I'll, yeah, I'll give you a call at 2 in the morning.
The moon mission, the United States moon mission, the Artemis program, is again been delayed. So, like, what else is new? What's the latest delay?
Well, they don't have everything built yet or designed yet, and you know when you're talking about human rated craft, it takes a while to build and test it and make sure it's all reliable, and unfortunately it gets expensive too, and that's another one of the problems, because we're looking at tight budgets, and so they're not ready, and so it's being delayed, just like Mars sample return.
Here are the five countries.
Ah.
I was right. India.
Oh, India.
Yeah. United States, Soviet Union, Russia, China, India, and now Japan. So there you go.
Hmm.
So what we keep having these potential problems with this mission. What's the purpose of this mission? Just to show the flag again up there or what?
That's basically it, because they're not really doing what they would need to do if they're serious about going up there and establishing, say, a permanent facility or something like that. You know, for instance, they're landing near the South Pole, which is great. You know, there's some potential water resources nearby and permanently shadowed regions, craters. But their activity is not to the geological activity of the astronauts is planned now. We put in a proposal to run this. Doesn't involve any like understanding the mechanical properties of the subsurface and the area, because if you want to build something, you know, you're going to be thinking about digging a hole and building something and using the gravel stuff to cover you up. But what if it's solid rock there? You know, you have to understand, if you're going to stay there for a while, a big priority has to be understanding the nature of the environment in which you want to operate.
And we still don't really understand it, do we?
Oh, well, no. You got to do core samples and things like that. In fact, the core samples that are planned for the permanently shadowed regions to see if there's, you know, ice, you know, down there. We know there's some from orbital measurements that have been made you know, they're limited to, like, we were limited in our proposal to coring 40 centimeters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the remote detections made with neutron spectrometers that gave the evidence for water beneath the surface, that's good down to about a meter. So you're not even probing through that.
Mm.
And so when I said, well, we ought to be doing, like, you know, 2 meters, you know, down to see what's really there. And I was told that, no, you can't do that. And do you know why?
Why?
Because it's limited in the proposal, or the call for proposals the people had to respond to. And I was wondering, where did it come from? Where did that 40-centimeter limit come from? It came from Apollo, because that's what we did in Apollo. And it's like, oh, my gosh, we're being restrained by what we did more than 50
yeah.
years ago?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Is it a way station thought that this would be a way station for the Mars mission?
I don't see how you could ever think of the surface of the moon as a way to get to Mars, because you got to go down a gravity well and then get out of a gravity well
okay.
to go where you want to go.
Okay.
You really want to make use of cislunar space. I mean, I've been involved with architecture plans on this kind of stuff for decades.
Yeah. You know, I keep getting information from your fine PR staff about, we keep you and PSI, Planetary Science Institute, the research you guys are doing about water on Mars. It's really, I think, surprising. We keep finding areas on Mars where there could be a lot of water.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I have to say it's always surprising how we keep discovering water. But, you know,
okay.
that's not the thing. Secondly, it gets driven down to lower and lower latitudes where there's areas of repositories of subsurface ice.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would say that and now there's more talk about areas where there might be liquid water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, underneath the surface and availing itself to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mars just gets more interesting the more we study it. And we've got some great teams at PSI that work on the shallow radar detector system.
Because it was thought of Mars was this bone dry place.
And, oh, yeah.
And it's surprising, I guess, we keep learning that it is not.
Yeah, well, I had that big polar ocean, you know, in the past, and our scientists have studied the effects of tsunamis, you know, from impacts into that ocean, and evidence for that on the shores, and it's a
big world
place.
Out there.
It is a big world.
Mark Sykes, always a pleasure. And if folks would like more information about Planetary Science Institute, and I hope they will, check out their website, psi.edu,
yes.
for more information. Mark, we wish you well, and you'll continue to be our contributor here, even though you will be doing probably more research, which will be fun because we'll be able to talk about that. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
All right. On behalf of Dr. Mark Sykes and John, engineering and producing the program, Bill Buckmaster saying, I wish everyone well.